I'm sure I'll get plenty of volunteers to tell me what to do. So historians run something that is often called counterfactuals. And that's when they go back and try to assess what would have happened had something happened differently. It's a what if kind of a question. What if the Moors had won in Spain and Spain was no longer Catholic but instead Islamic, for instance? What if the Dutch had kept New Amsterdam, we now know it as New York? What if Louis XVI in France had been a fair but firm king and there was no revolution? And you could go on and on through history like that. What if Lee had won at Gettysburg? What if Booth had never shot Lincoln that night at the theater? I don't generally participate in those things. I'm a big untrained in regards to just world history. I especially like learning about World War II. Counterfactuals abound in World War II. What if the Japanese had won the battle at Midway? What if June 6, 1944 didn't go well and the invasion of France? But I avoid those kinds of questions, even in some of my more favorite areas of study, because I generally, personally, don't see any real value in that. I'm not a big counterfactual person. It is what it is. But I do have a modern one that I often think about. What if there were no Kardashians? That one I ponder all the time. I think most of us, though, do a different kind of. We don't so much dabble in the counterfactuals, but what if I'm not good enough? What if this doesn't work? What if I lose my job? What if my child becomes ill? What if I fail? In our reading today, God is commissioning Moses as his spokesman. He really doesn't have to do anything in particular other than just repeat what God is telling him exactly what to say. Right out of the gate, Moses is like, yeah, but what if? In fact, he starts it just a few verses earlier in chapter 3, verse 11. But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? What if I'm not enough? Perhaps you don't know about it, God, but I tried this 40 years ago. It didn't go well. What if?" Moses is seeking advice from God, and to the degree that we're asking what if, but expecting a reasonable answer that we can accommodate, that's healthy. How do you want me to respond? What do you want me to do? Those are fair questions, but clearly that's not what Moses is interested in. To that in a moment. Because ultimately, Moses is still hoping that God will choose to. And so we often think of these what-if statements in Exodus chapters 3 and 4 as excuses, and they are excuses. Reminds me of the young man who was attracted to this really beautiful girl. So he asked her out on a date, and she said, no, I can't. I have homework tonight, and I have to get it done. It's an important project due at school. Monday, I have to get it done. He thought that was reasonable. Thank you very much. He let a week or two pass, but boy, he was still smitten, so he calls her up again. How about a date tonight? No, I'm sorry, I can't. I have to do something with my family. Oh, that's okay, I understand. You know, family's important. So he bows out, withdraws the request. And then two or three weeks later, he's getting up the courage again, so he calls her. How about we go out to a movie tonight? No, I can't. McDonald's just canceled the McRib. He's had enough. By by this point. He goes, what do you mean? What does that possibly have to do whether you and I go to a movie or not? And she goes, well, son, I figured one excuse. Called back. One excuse. Issue at hand. What if thinking? That's what I want to spend talking about this morning. So as we progress into this idea, we're going to come back to our text now and look at it for just a few moments, as well as some other verses closely associated with it. In the ESV, Moses says to God, what if I come to the people? And I tell them what you've told me to say. The God of your fathers has sent me to you. And then they ask me, what is your name? What if? What then? What am I supposed to do then? God says, I am. The same phrasing will be used by Jesus, John 8:58. And we could spend a lot of time talking about God's true name, but I handled that recently. I want to concentrate on the word. Now, I struggle with it. It's gotten worse after I had a few hard knocks. From 0 to 33, I had one of the most blessed lives in all of creation. But from 33 to 40, whoo, I'd trade with anybody in the room, I guarantee you. I didn't like that part of my life too much. And I developed the habit of what if. Now, I always had it a little bit. I guess I had it a little bit from being a Boy Scout, you know. I was telling them all Tuesday morning in Sojourner's class, Tammy can pack in a suitcase the size of the top of this thing right here for 2 weeks. I will have 15 bags, 3 briefcases, a clothing bag, and a few doc kits. What if I have to preach? That's one of my favorites. Well, we're going to the beach, honey. I know, but I need a suit. What if I have to preach? I don't need a suit. But I got to be prepared. You know, every contingency has to be allotted for. What if? Well, I can't just have one shirt at the beach all day. What if I sweat in it? You know, what if I get sand in it? I got to have 3. It's also gotten worse since I got up. I think even the book of Ecclesiastes acknowledges. You just are more prone to the what if kind of thinking the older you get. You get a few hard knocks. You get a little older, and all of a sudden that what if starts creeping in. Now, I will say, I don't generally struggle in it in relation to God. If I feel like God's telling me to do something, I try to not what if him. I try. But Tammy has to suffer from it. I figure I'm not the only person in the room that's been here. So basically, God is telling Moses, I want you to go tell the most powerful human being on the face of the earth to let his slave labor go. Oh, by the way, it'll ruin his economy, and yes, you are 80. I mean, we could surely think of all kinds of modern day analogies. God comes to you and says, I want you to go to a foreign country, the kind of people that hate you. You already got a bad reputation there. And I want you to tell them this or that or the other. And you're like, yeah, I'm pretty sure they're going to kill me for that. It's a little bit understandable to see Moses' reaction here. I'm not condoning it by any stretch. I'm saying, I get it. What if this doesn't work, Lord? by human standards, this doesn't have a shot to work. Moses tried it under human standards 40 years ago. He saw a Hebrew being beaten by an Egyptian. He killed the Egyptian and buried the Egyptian in the sand. And then the next day, he sees two Hebrews arguing. He steps in and pleads with them not to argue, but to get along as brethren. And one of them smarts off to him. What are you going to do, kill me like you killed that Egyptian? He knew the gig was up. He tried it under his own steam, and he had to run with his tail between his legs. And so from the human perspective, trying to do something over our head doesn't seem possible, and in fact, usually it's not possible. Now, I like getting out into deep water. I'm not a what-if thinker in that. I will take on a risk. But Moses says, this one's kind of big. We have to at least consider something Maxie Dunham said quite a while ago. Most people prefer the hell of a predictable situation rather than risk the joy of an unpredictable one. Better the demons you do know than... It's just a nicer way to say the same thing. Most people prefer the hell of a predictable situation than risk the joy of an unpredictable situation. I also wonder, too, if a little bit of Moses' issue isn't almost the opposite sort of a thing. You've been tending sheep out in the wilderness for 40 years. You might get a little complacent. You've settled into a nice kind of existence here. It's quiet. Nobody expects anything of you. You can just go through your day being a good person, thinking good thoughts, and doing a job well done. And at the end of the day, you go home to your wife and kids, and everything's hunky-dory. Wow, who wouldn't sign up for that? So not only has Moses had some hard knocks, not only is he a little older, but now he's been able to settle into a rut for 40 years. He's complacent. And complacency certainly leads to what-if thinking. But when God answers with his name, and this is the part I really need you to get this morning at this point clearly, God is saying, Moses, this isn't about you. This is about me. This is about I am. You're going. So we spent a few moments looking at it from Moses' perspective. Now let's look at it from what I think should be our perspective. Because it's clear in this whole passage, we started off with 3:11, 3:13, and 14. You can also look at 4:1. What if they won't take me seriously or obey me, but say the Lord did not appear to you? So it's what if I'm not adequate in 3:11? What if they don't know who you are in the verses we read? What if they don't take me seriously in 4:1? And finally, you could add 4:10, I'm no good with words. What if I'm not good at this job you're giving me, Lord? That's a good one. A lot of people pull that one off. Preacher, that's not where I'm blessed. That's not my talented section of life. I love hearing that one. Sounds good when you say it, but you'll look at Moses saying it, you'll go, he shouldn't say that. Finally, down in 4:13, please, Lord, just send someone else. I don't want the job. He knows. He already knows that each time God has said, Moses, this isn't about you, it's about me. Here's what I'm going to do about it. Each time, God redirected Moses and said, your what-if thinking is inappropriate because I'm not a what-if kind of guy. I am that I am. What I say will happen, and how I say it'll go, that's how it'll go. But in fairness to Moses, if we're going to look at this from our perspective, Moses doesn't once ever what-if God directly. What if your plagues aren't strong enough, God? He never says that. What if you run out of power? Moses never says that. What if you're not faithful enough? Moses never says that. What if you're not powerful enough? Moses never says that. Moses' what-ifs are all directed at either himself or the people he is about to set free. What if I'm not good enough? And what if they won't listen to me? That's basically it. You could boil it down to those two statements. So we're going to have to decide where our true identity lies. Does our true identity lie with who we are? Or who they are, whoever they is? Or does our true identity reside with who God is? I know Moses has had some hard knocks. I know this problem surely had to get older as it got worse. I can see where he might have grown complacent, but he never doubts God. He doubts himself, and he doubts the very same people God is sending him to rescue. And this is because he knows himself, and he knows those people. And he has failings, and so do they. And God is saying, I don't care. You are going, and they are coming home. And so Moses ultimately had to reside not with his own identity, or not with a true identity of Israel as we would define it. I mean, how many times have I said, those Israelites didn't figure anything out. They complained the whole 40 years. They never did get it. Moses was right in assuming they weren't going to get it. And God's answer is, you might be right, but you're going anyway. You're right, you're not up to the task. And you're right, they're not going to listen. And guess what? This is still going to happen the way I say it's going to happen. But I would like to point out at this moment, from our perspective, we need to understand that although Moses doesn't doubt or question God at all, pragmatically speaking, that's still how he winds up handling it. God tells you to do X and you say, no, I don't think I'm good enough. You can reflect on yourself all you want to, but ultimately what you're doing is still telling God no. Pragmatically speaking, you are still refusing to listen to God because he says you're going and you say, no, I'm not good enough. You are still doubting God. You don't mean to, but at the end of the day, that's still what you've done. You've thrown shade at him regardless. So this is some of my experience over 40 years of preaching. Every congregation that I've known, seen, heard of, read about will not grow as long as they tend to be more concerned with their present stability rather than any future potential. As long as a church is more concerned about their present peacefulness than they are about the hill God's asking them to march towards, they will sit there and be engaged in all kinds of what-if thinking. The sower will not sow. What if it rains tomorrow? The travel will not travel. What if there's a lion on the road? And the Bible constantly is addressing our what-if thinking. And that's because our fear always fuels what if, and it ruins our ability to see our true identity. And our true identity should no longer reside in who we are, but it should reside in who God is. All right, one last question. How did this feller get this job anyway? All right, you go to hire somebody for a position. They come in and say, yeah, I'm not going to be good at that. I don't even like the people you're asking me to work with. You still going to hire that feller? God does. Same story in Jonah, right? Lord, I don't want to go to the Ninevites. Now, ultimately, it's because he knows that they can repent, and if they do, God will forgive them. He doesn't want them to be forgiven. At the end of the book, he is outright mad because God was gracious to them. I don't want the job, Lord. I'm going to run away to Tarshish. I don't like those people. This isn't for me. You're going. If I have to swallow you in the belly of a large fish for 3 days, you're going. I don't care how long it takes, you're going. Sometimes we try to decide who's fit for a job when we should be asking, who is God wanting to send? And perhaps more importantly, we should be saying, here am I. Send me. So with the last few minutes we have left, let's think about this from God's perspective. Despite Moses' fears or his doubts or his flaws or the flaws of Israel, God says, this is your job, you're going to do it. You're going to go talk to the elders. Then you're going to talk to Israel, and eventually you're going to talk to Pharaoh, and then you're going to lead my people out, and that's the way it's going to go. But from God's perspective, his I am-ness, his absolute power, ability, and sovereignty allows for Moses' struggle, up to a point, albeit, I grant that, but he still allows for it. Our almighty I am allows for Moses to be human. Because God's will is wide enough to accommodate our mistakes. And any belief you have about God must accommodate for the flaws that you will bring to the table. But he still wants you to go. Now, contrary to my whole entire sermon, I do want to point this out in fairness because we're going to come back to it later on in the month. Asking what if can be productive. There is a time and a place to ask what if. So don't throw it out. Don't throw it all away. But anytime you're asking what if out of fear, and in essence, telling God no because of it, that's always out of place. And that's what I've tried to exemplify for you this morning through the story of Moses in Exodus chapters 3 and 4. Asking what if, and in essence, using that to tell God no is a mistake. And the I am says, I am who I am, and you are going. You are my chosen leader, so don't what if me on this. But most importantly this morning, and this is what I really need you to grasp, overall, I hope you see the connection between knowing who God is, which we talked about last month, and this what if. if you know God is the great I am, you will what if him way less. And that's why we start out with the things we can know for sure. And then we move into this if concept. And there are some powerful things behind if that we'll talk about this month. But the what if is usually a dangerous thing. Especially if you tell God no because of it. Because it means you don't know him. Moses would come to know God and he would stop saying what if. And that's my prayer for you as well. So as the West was being settled here in the United States, one particular man led his wagon train out. He was voted the leader. Each wagon train would vote their own leader, if you didn't know that historically. That's a fact. Not fake history. That's really true. And so this one particular gentleman led his wagon train out west, and they got to where they wanted to stop. They weren't all the way on the West Coast, but they liked where they were. They stopped. They settled in, and under his leadership, they developed a thriving community of happy people. And as the man got older, he would sit out on his front porch, which was on the far eastern side of town, and somebody would pull up and say, "Old man, what kind of people are in this town?" And carefully, he'd always say, "Well, what kind of people did you leave where you came from?" "Oh, they were the worst sort of people. They were just miserable neighbors. I hated every one of them. I couldn't wait to leave." Keep on moving. That's the same kind of people you're going to find here. And every once in a while, somebody would stop and say, "Man, I had the best neighbors. I hated to leave them." "Well, you should move in here because you're going to find those same kind of people." Same guy, same town. The advice differed because he could tell how they were going to receive it. Now my question to you this morning is, how are you going to receive it? To the cantankerous sort of person who's always looking for a problem, I'm not going to be able to stop your what-if-ness. You can do it until Jesus comes. Wish I could stop it. I want to stop it. Trying to stop it. It'll be up to the Lord. It's above my pay grade, let's just put it that way. I don't have the requisite skills to stop it for you. But if you're willing to be among good people and have a good community and thrive, you're in the right spot. So don't despair if you tend to what if, because one of the greatest people in the Bible, Moses, tended to do the same thing. But he did learn, despite his advanced years and his hard knocks and his complacency, to overcome it by identifying with the one true God. And you can do the same thing. So don't despair if you tend to what if. But for sure this morning, consider, don't do it to God anymore. If you have a need, why don't you come as we stand and sing?